You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
It's the Cooligans, stupid.
Yo, what's good, everyone? Look at this. Look, it's not Alexis next to me. It's a different, not a bearded man, but a mustache, a mustachioed man. Tom, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Different tracksuit, too. That's what I thought you were going to go for. You know, it's like, it looks like a little bigger jacket. Maybe I took one from Alexis.
I replaced one jersey, dude. For another.
Fill in the quota, baby. NJ, when we talk about MLS US National Team quota, the NJ quota is the only thing I want to hear about.
Okay. Look, this is, there's something, I don't know what, if there's a, the show can't be done without somebody from Jersey representing New Jersey for whatever reason. And I don't exactly know why. I don't know what, it's overrepresented in American soccer. There's, I don't know what is it, I don't know what's in the water. I don't know. It makes no sense, but for whatever reason. But I'm happy you're here, Tom.
Overrepresented and over annoying. I'll admit that. So we're loud too. So it amplifies everything that we.
They
got.
Brag about it all the time. No, dude. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, we're recording the Cooligans podcast. If anybody is not aware, we're live here on YouTube. Eric Keating says you're okay.
You're.
Look at that. So. Yes, Alexis is currently in London. He is shaking hands, kissing British babies. He went to the North London Derby. Yeah. What's your Prem team?
Liverpool.
Liverpool. Oh, that's right. I didn't know that. Okay. And of course, I brought a Liverpool fan when I'm the Everton supporter. And check out our interview with Tom Davies that was just released today, if you're listening to this yesterday. Have you been to Anfield?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I studied abroad when I was in college, and it's weird that it only took me 3 minutes to bring this up on the show, because whoever studies abroad, they love telling you that they studied abroad. But I was in London, and man, anytime I could get a game ticket to Liverpool, I would take the train up and figure it out. Stay in a hostel. I had family friends that are in Liverpool, so it was magical. Even though this was the end of the Brendan Rodgers era, this was the year after the Luis Suarez title chase. I got the Mario Balotelli half a season. That's what I got. So, and I still loved it.
Okay. And you know, it also feels like we're in the middle of the end of the Brendan Rodgers era at Leicester. So it's interesting. Bay Raguna said, Christian, stop getting co-hosts that support better clubs than yours. Well, okay. Look, this is actually an interesting thing, because I reached out to you yesterday, and I texted you the address of the studio, and I texted him the wrong address, so he was almost late, and it was totally my fault. But the what was I gonna say? I forgot what I was gonna say, because I mentioned the stupid being late thing. Whatever, we'll keep moving. I'll remember later. This one I remember, because Paul Nelson said that's hard to do. Whenever I need a co-host, especially for to cover, this is Shouts to US, where we focus on all things American soccer today. And when I want to talk to somebody about MLS and I need a co-host, I'm starting to realize there are a few people, honestly, and I say this, on the planet that I can reach out to that for, like, just decisive, knowledgeable takes on Major League Soccer. That realistically, like, it's, look, I mean, it's you. It's Matt Doyle. It's Weeby. It's Charlie Davies. You know what I mean? Yep. I think it's an interesting thing. And look, we'll just get started here, because there's like a limited amount of people, and it's obviously a few more people that I didn't mention. So please do not get, don't feel insulted.
I get sidetracked by that all the time, where I'm trying to make a point, and then I'm like, don't forget a person, don't forget a team. And then 20 minutes later, I'm talking with like outside looking in.
It's like, all right, who knows MLS? Who is within, you know, a 10-mile radius that I can reach out to? And there's just a limited amount of people. So I think there is something to the value of the people who choose to focus on MLS, because at first it seems like a mistake, right? A lot of times people are like, you're going to focus on Major League Soccer. And we're like, hold on, I swear it might pan out. I think I'm a gambling man. But there's something to, you know, there's 4,000 Premier League pundits. Mm. But there's a few MLS people that are really trusted, and you are really one of those people, that it sort of starts to feel like the value of the American soccer information is a little bit higher because it's less, saturated.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's something to that. And I thought that the beginning of that was going to be making fun of, oh, yeah, you can't find people who don't like Liverpool, City, or United and going to make fun of me being a front runner or something like that. But no, you were going with the MLS angle. Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny because, you know, when I started to have a little bit of success, someone's like, oh, like, would you want to, you know, go cover the Premier League or something in Europe? And I was like, I mean, generally, yeah, like, why? I wouldn't say no to that. But my value is the information and the knowledge here. Like, that's not exportable. Like, you don't just become an insider like that. Like,
right,
said,
right.
4,000 Premier League people, like there's just such an oversaturated market. Even that sounds gross the way you're talking about it like that.
We're having a business meeting.
There's just so many people there, and there's so many great writers, and there's a lot of great writers, great insiders here and stuff, but there's a little bit more space for teams to breathe. And because expansion is never ending, there's going to be about 4,000 MLS teams, so there'll never be too many insiders here. So.
Okay. Yeah. Look, we were just talking about that right before we went on air about the, you know, as MLS grows, we're gonna need more. We're gonna need more Bogarts, because there's a lot of teams, and it can get realistically, it can get overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. In a lot of leagues that are 20 teams, people I think can be experts on maybe 10, right? But then when they ask you to be like, it's like 28, 30. How do you do it, Tom?
It's tough. It really is. Like, I try to watch as much as I can. Obviously, you're not going to watch all the games, you know, at least extended highlights for everything, going through second spectrum numbers, talk to all the sources. And, you know, obviously, you know that people will be biased about themselves, but, you know, you try to talk to as many people and you know, get a good informed idea. But there is like an imposter syndrome of like, all right, am I 100% sure? Hey, like, I didn't watch the full game of this midweek Houston DC game. Do I really know? It's like, you do really know. It's there's just a lot going on.
You can trust your gut. And you're a soccer guy. I played soccer with you. And like, unlike, you know, I've played in some of these media games. You played in a couple of them, bro.
I would take it too seriously. Good thing that I haven't yet. That's the problem. I mean, too fun to be yelling at people.
I played in a couple of them. And, you know, some of these media guys, you're like, all right, all right, you know, but then I play in college, right?
Yeah, Kane University.
Okay, yeah.
D3. New Jersey D3, though, so that could be like Midwest D1.
So the level's a little bit higher. It's all good. I'm excited about today's show. Obviously, it's nice to have a guest co-host and not deal with Alexis for 1 week. So that's always fun. But we have a bunch of questions from our Patreon folks. Today we'll talk about some of the results from the past weekend. We will discuss Decision Day, which is coming up. We'll also spend some time towards the end of the show. We'll talk about everything going on with the Yates Report and NWSL and talk about that a little bit. So where to begin today? Obviously, you know what? Let's start. Let's be homers, right? Because so NYCFC just played Orlando at Red Bull Arena. And won that game 2-1. I was very excited about it. Obviously, I'm an NYCFC fan. You're the Red Bull guy, all right? You are...
This is a misnomer about me. People keep saying this. Like, genuinely not a fan of anybody. Like,
I want to label you. You've been on the MSG broadcast.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
Along with Shep, all right?
MSG guy.
You're an MSG guy. So let's have a fist fight. No. The interesting thing here is, obviously, it was a big win, and it put NYCFC to clinch a home playoff spot. But the news came out today about where this game would be played, because we see that The Yankees are doing well in baseball. So are the Mets, and which is are both homes for NYCFC. Look, and as a Mets fan, I'm upset that the Yankees are doing well. I really just want them to fail. I just want them to fail enough to not make the playoffs. Is that too much to ask? Respectfully, but the news came out that if we'll find out after decision day if the results are where Rebels end up in, I believe that would be fifth place or sixth place. NYCFC would host the game at Rebel Arena, technically, but if the game is against Red Bull, they will have to find an alternative venue. Which is, again, the fodder on...
Not ideal. It's not ideal.
The fodder. So basically, I'm like, you know, I want the Rebels to lose, but not lose too much. And I don't want that. It's a weird situation to be in. But when you saw... I mean, what do you... I mean, I'm sure you deal with it a lot as well. Just like people commenting on all the stadium stuff or whatever. But just this situation, this is a pretty weird one for MLS's sake.
Yeah, even for one of the most weird, the most chaotic fun leagues in the world. This is weird and chaotic and odd for this league. Like, it was funny, too. So you brought up the game this weekend where NYCFC were home at Red Bull Arena again. Like, when Orlando were winning 1-0, the stats are going around. Like, I was talking to people, and it's like, if this results hold, like, hey, can you check this for me? If this results hold, like, they're going to be like 0-whatever as the home team at Red Bull Arena, but they're like 2-0 as the road team at Red Bull Arena. It was like all these like fun, weird stats, but they came back at once, so that ruined all that. But yeah, it's just so funny. Like, I know that this is serious, and people, like you said, people in comments and mentions, it's like, people like at Tom Boyle, like, this can't be, this is a joke. How could this be allowed? It's like, bro, what do you want me to do about it? I can't do anything about it. Like, I'm just like,
I mean, I think if you're a fan or not, everybody wants NYCFC to have a stadium just to, like, stop with this discourse.
Like, the Red Bulls don't want them there. Like, Red Bull fans don't want them there. Like, we're all rooting for the same outcome here. Like, setting that aside, it's kind of funny. Like, if you want to, like, take a positive look at it, just like, all right, where are they going to play? Are they going to be home? They've already had six different home stadiums this year. Like, It's out of control.
It's look, even as an NYCFC fan, I mean, it's embarrassing, right? It's a little embarrassing. It's not ideal, but I think the thing that most NYCFC fans they are frustrated with the situation, but there's a little bit of like, I think we're gonna win anyway, right? Well, it doesn't matter where we play. Like, there's a little bit of confidence. Look, they went on a bad run of games, And, you know, after Campeones Cup, it seemed to, like, turn the tide. Yeah. I don't know how much you specifically been watching NYCFC, but the decisions that Nick Cushing made to change this, to just put, you know, they were playing a back four, and then it was like, you know what? I'm just putting all my center backs in the game. I just want some stability. We're giving up too many goals. Because the concern was always, when you have Thiago Martins, Alex Collins, and Maxime Cheneau, if one of them gets injured, somebody can back the other one up. And I think now the point was, you know, I think the big decision actually was to bench Malte Amundsen, and that just seemed to resolve the defensive issues, at least short term.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, it's a good point that you bring up, because Cushing was rightfully getting a lot of flack for how the team, like, again, Tati Castellanos leaving without a real replacement. That's going to be difficult for anybody, regardless of whether it was Ronnie Dyla or anybody. But Nick Cushing, like, they changed the way they played. They were pressing so much less. It was just weird. They kind of took the identity and changed it. And like you said, he made adjustments, and they kind of figured it out. And, like, right at the ship, there was talk about, like, is he going to last the season as interim coach? Not is he a candidate for the full-time job. Is he going to last the season? So full credit to him for that. Keaton Parks coming back is immensely, immensely important. Like, there's some players and sometimes in situations, you know that Keaton Parks is a really good player. You know all the things that he does. But, like, you didn't really appreciate it until he's not in the game, and it's like, wait a minute. Oh, the defense can't press him. So we won't lose the ball, and so then you can play more expansive and be on the ball more. Like, and you lose the ball further up the field, which sets up pressing situations rather than playing on the back foot. It's like all these things that, again, you knew that he was this good, but it's like, oh wow, like, you take him out and you see how important he was. And Alex Collins coming back, was another one. And again, the defense being in kind of more cohesion that they are. Like, again, like, I thought they were dead in the water. I was out on them. I was like, there's no way for this to be rectified, particularly with Tati not there to kind of paper over some cracks. And they haven't. And they're going to be. You know, if the playoffs started a month ago, I couldn't see a scenario in which anybody picked them to win a game, let alone anything else. Like, wherever they played, home, away. So I mean, like, it is impressive the fact that they've kind of, you know, gotten it back to just, you know, steady water.
And you had them out because you are an ardent Rebel supporter. We've discovered this. Some people are saying, ooh, look, furniture, Robin Tagini. Yes, everybody. Well, there's furniture here for the first time. It arrived yesterday. Literally, I had reached out to a couple comedians that are also movers, and they brought... Shout out to Peter Ravello, Matt Pavich, hilarious comedians who brought our stuff up. Look, it's coming together. I'm excited. Okay. Brooke Materia said Alex Collins should be NYCFC's new number 9, which is
a very bold proper center boat.
Bold even the goal that he scored, I'm just like, why is he there? Literally, he's like sitting inside the goal.
Him as a left center back in a back three, he just says, F it. I'm playing like freedom, like, yeah. Nick, I got this. Don't you worry. Hey, like, center backs, you guys stay back. I'm going to play free.
And I score, Bruce, can you see NYCFC repeating this? I assume this year, yeah. That's a good question.
No.
You don't see it.
I just said a lot of nice things. Dude, there's...
You know what?
Look, Philly are too good. Montreal have proved me wrong. I thought that their fatal flaws were going to be really bad for the playoffs. I'm still not, like, totally sold on them, but there's just so many other good teams. That, look, anything can happen in a four-game sample size, but, yeah. Like... I don't trust them to put together four really good performances in a row.
The Philly to me is definitely the team that is almost seems unbeatable unless they play Charlotte for some reason.
Daniel Rios with Kryptonite.
But the Montreal, I think NYCFC could early in the season, it was a different Montreal, but they did beat them pretty handily. I think 2-0, 3-0, But yeah, I don't see... I think Philly are probably easily the favorites to make it out of the Eastern Conference. And I think if Philly makes it out of the Eastern Conference, I think they win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
I don't see... I've had this conversation with a couple people, but do you think LAFC even makes it to the MLS Cup final?
Dude, that's the thing. Like the 2019 team that won the Supporters Shield, I thought that was like the best soccer I've ever seen. It was like 2017 Toronto, and then if you go back earlier, like some of the Red Bull Supporters Shield winning teams, and some of like, you know, obviously the Galaxy, but like the league continues to get better. That 2019 LAFC team was just another level, and they were vulnerable to the Sounders and lost in whatever the conference semifinals. Like, it is really difficult to like lay out this track. Like, yeah, sure, like one game sample size, anything can happen, but like that 2019 team was probably better set up. They were definitely better. But they had so many fewer questions. Like Gareth Bale, like he started what, like twice or whatever. He hasn't played more than 60 minutes, I think, at all. Like in a single game. Like
he has the Antoine Griezmann deal. I don't know why isn't he playing? Like,
there's so many questions around the team, and there are so many good teams out west. But like again, Philly looked vulnerable against Charlotte, and they should have lost to Atlanta, but Atlanta didn't kind of win that game. Andre Blake was incredible. LAFC have had their trials and tribulations. Austin, as they were putting the middle fingers up to everybody who air quote doubted them, they went on a bad run of form. Like, yeah. Montreal is the only team that is kind of over the last month playing their best, I think. But sure. Like Philly's best is better than that. And like you're looking at the stand, like Cincy, they lost the other day to Chicago without all three of their TPs. Like they were looking good. They weren't like a real cup contender or whatever. But you know what I mean? Like you could see or make a case for anybody. NYCFC just said no. You could give me 5 minutes making a case, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that. Like
okay.
It's the playoffs feel more wide open this year than ever, and they always feel wide open.
This the one thing I'm at least excited about is that Chicharito will be in the playoffs.
Oh my god! Yeah.
This year, just as a look, if we're running a bit, MLS is a business.
All right, you're saying not, running a bit.
Let's not be crazy. We're running a business here. Chicharito's one of the most famous players easily in North America.
Yeah.
And to not have him be a part of the big show it would be disappointing. But LA they're just so disappointing. I don't know any other way to put it. It's I feel for their fans, especially when they have to take a penalty, right? Because we had quoted you recently because you had put up the
they've taken 14 now. 14!
And they've made how many? 8 or something? 9.
Because I put up the stat when they missed their penalty against Real Salt Lake, and then 30 minutes later they got another one. So
that is absolutely brutal because they really should... Well, I mean, It's also crazy that they're going to possibly hosting
it's,
again.
It is incredible. Like
after because it is that tight in the Western Conference, but the look, if they lose a game, at least you know they'll have a playoff game, but they, them having that playoff game, which would most likely be against let's say Nashville, that's a tough game. That's a game they don't want, and it's weird too cuz Nashville was just like in third
and then they lost at home to Houston. Went like it just it's all just insane. It's so difficult. Like it was funny. Like talking about the Red Bulls last year, I was making fun of myself because I thought they were gonna do well in the beginning of the season, and then they started to do poorly, and I was like, oh, I was wrong. And then when I was like piling on, I was like, yeah, like I was wrong about this team, and like I should have like it was pretty obvious in hindsight. Then they went on a winning one, so it was like I was wrong about this team numerous different times in all the different ways, and like. Nashville, I thought, okay, they're in. Galaxy, like 2 weeks ago, Doyle tweeted, like, we might have to take their season out back and, like, put them down, like, after they lost to one of their disappointing results. And then all they've done is won since then until they draw RSL. It's just, it's insane to follow.
You know what? Keep talking about that.
you got a little care package from Nashville SC as well?
I'm
a distinguished adult with a mustache, so I have a record player. I was gonna put the honey with the record, the gift here in front of I think my girlfriend had a like Fleetwood Mac track out or something. I was gonna put the honey one in front and just not say anything and see how long that she did it. And I was like, but then I looked over and it's like bright yellow.
So a few people you may have seen this online, I might as well just open it. Just remember it. We're gonna talk about Nashville. But Nashville has been sending out I say this respectfully. Is it propaganda? I don't know.
I mean, when I was answering my address, it was like, this isn't a bribe.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. Hani Mukhtar is, obviously he's up for MLS MVP. The dude's a baller. I like this as well. SKC Fan TV just said, insane how people with mustaches know ball. There we go.
I'll take it. I haven't heard that one before. I love that.
Have you seen SKC Fan TV stuff?
Oh my gosh, yeah. What am I talking about?
Yeah, dude. He's great.
Yeah,
right?
He is. I see a lot of his reaction videos going on Twitter.
Yeah, great. And I always tell him, I'm like, we need more of that. Yeah. It's great to see. But this is it's a record, right?
Yeah.
It's a record. It's
of his goal tracks, like the commentary calling all of his goals.
So I need somewhere to play this.
You can come over.
And it's autographed by Hani himself.
I thought that was like, just, what's it called? Like, not him, printed or whatever. And then, like, I got pictures from the club of, like, no, this was him. Like, did all this.
This is badass. Thank you. Thank you very much, Nashville. I mean, look, who knows who we vote for in the MLS MVP voting, but best of luck. You know, I'm not saying this is influencing my decision at all, but it's a very, very nice gift. So thank you. An ice cream brew said that's dope AF. It is dope. All right, you know what? All I'm saying is more teams need to send me gifts to really just, you know, sway my opinion a little bit. They do this with Oscar in the Academy Award voting. They send some people a couple things, a couple of the journalists. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hey, nobody saw anything. All right, that wasn't on the live broadcast. Nobody saw a thing. I want to get to a couple questions from Gully Squad, from our Patreon folks, because a lot of people had some great questions. And I want to talk about your career a little bit, because since the last time you were on the show, Tom Bogert stock has risen beyond. It's so awesome to see. We're talking about this, and we were comparing you to Fabrizio Romano. You and Fabrizio Romano, I think, are homeboys. You have
genuinely. We talk occasionally. Like, he's a really, really nice person.
Right, great dude. I've DM'd with him a couple times. Great guy. Do you have his number? You text him.
I DM him. Okay. I think he's got enough going on.
Okay, good. All right. You know, you don't want to. Those international fees are crazy. I get it. It's all good. But just the fact that, you know, I think what Fabrizio stardom has become is just like this, obviously, football insider, especially with everything in European football. You know, obviously, we need that here. And I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, I'm saying, but I feel like you are genuinely stepping into that role. Does that feel like what you are doing and want to be doing?
I appreciate that. I'm not going to sit here and say that yes, because that would, I'm taking myself too seriously. Like, there was a lot of other like really great reports on the mentor, Sam Stajko. There's obviously Paul Tenorio and, you know, Jeff Carlisle. Insert again. Like, I don't want to be on like an acceptance speech of like naming 400 people I got to thank. Like, so like everybody, you guys know who all the insiders are. You know who the people that you trust are. But like, it's a really good group of people. Like, genuinely, like, Sam is you know, an incredible person. Like, I know that you guys know him as well. Like,
yeah.
So it's like, the people that, if you're watching this or listening to this, I assume that you like some of us. And, like, the people that you see, like, they really are the, like, genuine good people. I know this wasn't the question that you asked, but, like,
I love
I'm uncomfortable saying that. Like, I mean, obviously, yeah, I'm ambitious. I want to break as much news as I can, do it the right way, tell good stories and everything. So, like, yeah, I mean, but calling it a Fabrizio Romano, he's got like 11 million followers. That's not, and the dude, even outside of the transfer window, he tweets like 8 scoops a day. And I'm like, who even has information? Like,
I do love it when he's like, you know, Inter Miami's interested in, but I'm like, whoa, Fabrizio. I know you hit up Tom.
I get so angry. I'm like, well, you don't have anything else to worry about? Like, come on, man. You follow 400 leagues. Leave me alone.
Is the job genuinely, can it be overwhelming?
Yes. I can't imagine his life. Yeah, I can't possibly imagine
you,
his life.
There's no way you're not, you know, have 40 WhatsApp threads going. And so just even like somebody asked a question. This came from MJ Lee. I'm just excited to ask this question because I don't think other people would ask you in other shows. But she says, how does he really get his scoops? Since he worked for MLS, does he have to bribe anyone for alerts? Which is such a what a ridiculous accusation. Where do you think you think he has the money to bribe anybody for a scoop?
And my favorite thing is, like, you know, some people who get angry are just like the anti-MLS people. It's like, oh, like he's on MLS. He like writes for MLSsoccer.com. So like, obviously he was just having lunch and like somebody gave him it, or like, you know, I'm like, bro, you don't think I'd break every single transaction if that was the case? Like, no, I don't have, there is no internal server that I have, like I make relationships and figure things, like, I don't know. It's like,
just the MLS intranet. Okay. That's where all the, that's where all the info is being shared. Mike Raymond said, the Fabrizio of MLS. Joseph Reaver said he uses a little bit of gammon and a little bit of TAM to get those scoops.
So, I don't have any international slots left. I'm giving them all away.
I mean, the job itself, as far as let's try to take some seriousness in that question of like, where do you get your sources from? And this is just assumption, and you don't have to reveal any specific sources, but I assume it's a lot of either agents, player agents, and stuff like that. That's my best guess.
You talk to everybody. I'm not. There's no specificities I'm going to get into, but it's not like, and if you're only talking to one person or one organization, again, whether it's a team, it's an agent, it's whatever it is, like, if you're only getting it from one person, you're getting a lot of spin, and like,
right,
where you have to be careful in like modern journalism, like, not to go on off too much of a tangent. It is difficult. It's like, and I think that the good news is media literacy is starting to become much, much better. People still believe everything on the internet, like, you know, there's still a tendency for that, but I think people are better at discerning who to trust and like, okay, like, that seemed like a lot of spin on something, and like, all right, this doesn't pass the sniff test. So I think that we're all getting better at that, so that's good. It keeps people honest.
Yeah, I mean, there is a real necessity for one, news to get out, mm-hmm. right? Because I always say this, like, within media, especially sports media, there is if players don't want to do interviews, let's say, I'm like, that's not really the right move. Or you getting the publicity helps your own brand, mm-hmm. helps the league grow, helps maintain interest in the sport. This is why, like, you know, people get annoyed at like First Take, and it's like they're talking about LeBron again. But for whatever reason, people want to know about LeBron over and over. And as even if they're mad at the coverage that is being delivered, they're still engaged. They're still interested for whatever reason. And we kind of just need that in American soccer. If everybody hated you, but you had 4 million followers, and it's just like. But it's like, well, we hate to love Tom.
I hate that. No, that's the thing, dude. Like, I don't know. Like, I understand that that's the majority of what you're saying. That's not for me. Like, the whole, I don't know. I get easily like, all right, like, what the hell are we talking about here? Like, when it comes like these like ridiculous or stupid, like, and I understand they have 3 hours of television to fill.
Sure.
It's not easy. And yeah, but like Mad Dog Russo, who's like obviously a legend in this kind of business, takes business. Like, I think he even admitted that, like, yeah, like, I was doing a top five and you know, I purposely left out the Boston Celtics because I knew that their fans would get mad and it'd be more engagement. It's like, bro, like, you're just going to be disingenuous and admit it? Like, like, why would... So, like, that stuff bothers me. Like, genuinely, I try to be that. And I think why a few people, you know, don't mind me is because I think that they can tell that I'm being genuine. Whether you like me or don't like me, there isn't an act. Like, I think people can appreciate that. And again, like, if you don't like me, I have plenty of things not to like me about. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. Nobody hates me like I hate me. Don't you worry.
Well, so, good. I'm glad I compiled this list, Tom. I needed to go through this.
Oh, yeah. I was ready for this. So, but no, like, again, like, I think that that's something, too. Like, I don't love the whole, like, air quote debate culture, embrace debate. Like, that's like,
yeah.
If you're just talking about nothing or saying that, like, LeBron would never take the last shot, like, I just exacerbated by that. I don't find that to be entertaining, but people do. And, like, again, I know that's a minority.
It is I have this argument with Alexis all the time. The who's the bigger club? Bro, this question, I will be the end of my days. I could care less about this, like, you know, the dick measuring contest of big club. And I'm just like, and it's such a common, the banter, especially in England, is such a common, like, oh, but you're not a big club. I'm a big club. You're a big club. Just like, bro, get a life. Can you look at something with a little bit more introspection than just
nuance.
Size? Why is size so important to these dudes? Anyway. Nick Red said, oh, please, no bigger club debate, especially when Alexis is not there to start. All right, yeah, we're not going to do it. Okay.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Let's pull up another question. This is from Andrew Johnson. He's obviously a Columbus Crew supporter. He says, if Crew doesn't win the cup, which is a very, the bar is very high.
Yeah, we're starting high.
Should Caleb be fired?
I wouldn't put it at cup for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit much. Columbus Crew are in an interesting spot because, when you look at the one MLS Cup 2 years ago and then these struggling results and then the suspension of Cucho Hernandez and in these hugely important games. But the homie, Derek Etienne Jr., here to save the day and possibly save Columbus Crew season. Now, what a huge...
Incredible.
Two goals.
Incredible.
That's been one... Every time I see... And Derek's a genuine friend, great dude. Ever since he's done the show, he's always, like, stayed in touch. I was on the same flight with him once. Yeah, I was actually... I left... this was in Portland. Derek went to Portland for the MLS Cup final.
Awesome.
And a lot of MLS players go. I saw like Dom Dwyer, Jaleel Anibaba, a bunch of guys. This is how much you know Derek loves Red Bull. And even though he was playing, he scored.
It's been a few years since he's on the Red Bull. But I love that too.
I don't know exactly how many, tried and true Red Bull guys that there are. And he's like a homegrown. He's like a legit dude. And we took the same flight. And the first thing he said to me, he's like, damn, yo, I hate that NYCSU. He won an MLS Cup. He's good. He's all set. But he was a genuine.
That's
genuine.
So funny. Oh, I love that.
And he didn't, he scored two huge goals and didn't celebrate, didn't really do much. Mm. We're not used to really seeing that in MLS that much.
Yeah. No, yeah. And, like, that's something that I wanted to ask more players about. Like, would you celebrate against blank? Like, whatever. And, like, it's not, like, a catch-all, like, yes or no binary question for the answer for everyone. Like, Derek doing that, not celebrating against the Red Bulls. And, again, it's been a few years. He probably could have felt hard done by that he wasn't getting the playing time he thought he deserved. They mostly had been playing without wingers, so that didn't help his playing time. He was somebody who, again, homegrown at the club. He was there for a long time. I could have seen that going either way, being like, F you. Like, you guys didn't really believe in me towards the end or whatever. You let me go for cheap. But no, like, that's really awesome. So again, that's a kid who, I don't know when he joined the academy, but it had to have been his early teen years or, like, 12 or 14, something. Like, that's what you want. Like, Kevin Paredes, when he went to Wolfsburg from DC United, like, he had this, the club put out a video of like him talking about, like, I was in the academy watching Steven Birnbaum and stuff like yeah. These are moments that are starting to come through as the academy's getting bitter. Like it is really cool. There really are genuine, legitimate homegrown, which there isn't that in other American sports. Like, you had LeBron that was from Ohio and went to the Cavs because the Cavs were the worst team in the league and had the number one pick. Like, that happens fortuitously. Like, there's a genuine, like, boyhood culture that comes, like, for American soccer. Like, that, yeah. Like, that's awesome. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah, we were having this conversation a couple weeks ago about just how the league is becoming old enough where kids are growing up with, you know, when Ricky Puig said, I couldn't believe the LA Galaxy contacted me. That's, you know, how old is he? 19, 18?
He's like 22.
Oh, okay. So,
like, still, young,
young
20,
kid, but grew up with, like, LA Galaxy. Yeah. There's a reverence and there's a lore around it. And people that are older than, let's say, 25 are like, oh, you know, they grew up with watching
with
MLS.
The MLS.
they grew up with watching MLS crawl before it could walk. And have that a little bit of bias, or mm-hmm. or at least they saw that it wasn't that it wasn't the league it is now, or it was directly they would compare it to other leagues, and it is what it is now. So that's why we're aging out. We're aging out of this league.
I feel washed.
We're done. Our opinions have no value. Okay, it's the TikTok generation that we have to start listening to. Michael Raymond said LeBron is a homegrown player. That's right. Justin Freeberg said kids are going to grow up with the best stash covering the league and with Tommy Scoops. Bro, that should be on your business card. Yeah. Best ash covering the league.
Well, it's a one of one category.
Anybody else? Nobody has nobody within MLS. When you go to the office sometimes, there's no stashes there.
Not really.
No. Beards are plenty. Yeah. Val Paschal on Gully Squad, she said, do you get any sleep? And if not, how does he survive on sleep fumes? Red Bull, 5-hour energy, ritual sacrifice. Which one is it?
No, man, the transfer windows, those, like, it is difficult. There's sometimes where, you know, you take phone calls like late and whatever. So that's why it's funny in the offseason. You're like, oh, season ended, no more games. It's like, oh, wait, like, I'm going to be as busy or at least more busy just without the game. So it's not bad in, like, October, September. Like, and, like, joking before about, like, Freacher Mine, I genuinely don't know how he does it. Like, and I'm, like, sometimes I feel overwhelmed and, like, it's not the same level as, like, what he's doing and I'm sure, like, all the stuff he's getting. But kind of a funny one along that framework. I was in Nashville with my girlfriend and it was, like, a Friday night and we're in, like, the downtown area, just going to a couple of different bars. And, like, there was a trade that I was kind of tracking and following.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, all right, like, I might get a text or something. And then I texted someone. I was like, oh, my God, like, it's happening. I got to report. I'm so sorry. Text somebody. And, like, I told the person I was texting, like, hey, like, just, like, I need to be brief. Like, I'm in Nashville, like, with my girlfriend. I feel like an asshole because I am. And and the guy immediately calls me instead of texting me, which was mean. He could have just texted me. He calls me. And the first thing he says is, you need to treat her better. This isn't worth it. As she's turning to me, like, do you need my phone to take notes? And I was like, wow, are you the one.
Are you a source or my therapist? Wow. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, I think a lot of people in relationships deal with, like, you know, you're on the phone a lot. But, I mean, it must be, especially during the transfer window, it must be, you know, you must be getting yelled at a little bit.
she's super, she made the therapist jokes. He is the therapist, so maybe maybe she's just taking this on as, like, her biggest challenge.
Amazing. And,
like, there's going to be a term paper one day. But, no, like, I do, like, that's, I try to be so, like, regimented about, like, all right, like, I have to turn my phone off so there's no chance that, like, I'm even distracted by Twitter or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, when those few moments happen, like, I try to take advantage as much as I can. But we're all addicted to technology, myself included, so it doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, I tell my wife, I'm like, there's a joke I have to make about the trade that Tom Boger reported on. It's his fault, not mine.
Blame me. Everybody listen to it. Blame me. Like, I'll take it. It's like stay home from school to go to the championship parade. Like, I'll write something down and, like, put it out.
Okay. Justin Freeberg asked, can Christian grow a mustache?
Show us some.
Great question.
Can we get a Zoom? Or?
We don't have a Zoom. We might have to do it in post, but not live. I always say this. I grow the type of mustache that it looks like a teenager is trying to look older. It really doesn't look great. It looks really, really poor.
I love it.
It's embarrassing. No. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't have the follicles. That's really it.
It's not even like your eyebrows aren't thinking. You know?
Dude, even my eyebrows, up until I was probably about 15, my friends used to be like, do you shave your eyebrows? Why are they so light and airy? They're so wispy.
You have a tick where you're plucking them out.
I'm like, nervous. No, this is it, bro. Like, if I did one of, like, I, you know, people used to shave their eyebrow, line in their eyebrow, I don't think it'd grow back. I think it'd take 42 years. It'd take 42 years for that to grow back, dude. Nick Red said, I'm guessing Christian grows a chia pet mustache. I think that might be the only way I could do it. Put the seeds on there, water it. Okay, I want to talk about a couple things. This was an article you wrote. You wrote about Gonzalo Higuain retiring. He did a press conference. There were tears. You know, we don't often we see these in La Liga, especially La Liga. For some reason, I don't know what is. Are the Spanish people better at crying? Or just something we're more. You don't see it in England.
Yeah, definitely not as much. Yeah,
you don't see just Lampard crying, you know, in a Chelsea shirt or whatever. But Gonzalo Higuain, and you go check out Tom's article on MLSsoccer.com. But there's something. I think when he got to the league, people immediately made assumptions about him. Right? It's always retirement league this, retirement league that. But I think after seeing the press conference and reading your story, I have like a different appreciation for him, like genuinely, because I definitely was affected by the comment, which I'm assuming was real, but the one about I thought I would play here with a cigarette in my mouth or whatever.
Yeah, he didn't do himself any favors for this reception. Like that was what I was about to say as you started that. Like, yeah. I was guilty of that too, and for cause. We didn't invent this out of thin air. Yep. You just watched him play. Like Fabian Herbers on Z Soccer Podcast with Julian Gressel and Fabian Herbers was like, F this guy. Like, that was a genuine sentiment, and like enough for him to say it on a podcast, like, repercussions be damned, because I'm sure people weren't exactly thrilled, like, at a club or at the league about it. So, like, that was a genuine thing. So, his press conference yesterday, he had a prepared statement. It was genuine, thoughtful, honest, introspective. Like, looked back at a career that's a little bit complicated just because we boil these players down to one moment. It's a different level because Gonzalo Higuain is legitimate world-class striker. And I don't 100%. Think people talk about that enough.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still the tied for the record for single-season goals in Serie A. This dude has scored more than 300 goals in his career, 75 appearances with Argentina. He's played in a World Cup final, two Copa America finals. But because he missed a chance in a World Cup final, that's all people remember and think about. And like he talked about it honestly.
He's the Wandalowski of Argentina.
That's where it came to me. Like when Wando retired last year, and a lot of MLS people were, again, MLS goal king. People were giving him praise, as you should go out. And we need to treat our legends better everywhere around. Like same thing with Higuain, not MLS legend, but just a soccer legend.
Yeah.
And so many people are like, you should have retired after 2014 when he missed against Belgium. He's like, bro, like it's like getting to the World Cup and being good enough to be in the World Cup squad is somewhat a detriment if you're not like the best or you like one moment, man, like of a career of all of this. And Higuain's the same thing. And like, there's a lot of, it's a complicated relationship with Argentine fans. And he talked about like, you know, 5 seconds behind a computer can ruin somebody's life. And he said, look, thank God I had so many people in my life that helped me, but some people don't recover from it. So just please think about what you're posting to, you know, not professional athletes, not to me, but just everybody in general. So I thought that was really powerful. It was a different side of Gonzalo Higuain that I've never seen. And again, maybe this is because I don't speak Spanish, so I don't know how many interviews he does or how often he speaks like this. But from what I've gathered, it was kind of the most open, honest, and introspective he's been. And it was really, really cool.
Never seen him be that vulnerable. He always came off to me as like a pretty kind of staunch, kind of serious dude. Almost very... the opposite of Federico Higuain, you know what I mean? Where he was just like the calmer older brother who was just like the voice of reason and a lot of every club he played for, all the players respected him. But I really did appreciate this from Gonzalo. Realistically, I wish he did it before announcing retirement. I don't know. I think the sort of what I was saying about players being honest and being transparent, I think that's a benefit to their brand. There's always going to be people that are just ridiculous on the internet.
But that's the thing. So, like, you know, you in the public eye and everything that you do is to an audience, and like, it's vulnerable. And particularly somebody like him, I can understand why. Like, he hasn't posted anything on Twitter. Like, you could tell that all of it, like, it's not him being him. And like, even when he was using it, like, that comes from, like, Jossie's artist early in the year had to turn off comments on his Instagram. Like, that's gross, man. It's awful. He's put up a picture of like his wife and children, and he has to turn off comments, or he puts up a picture of, oh, like, didn't get the result we wanted today. And just, it's awful. And it's, so I understand why people would be closed off. Like, maybe it's just me being a little naive. Like, I'm with you. I wish that, you know, I think that did more good than harm, or like the vulnerabilities he's opening up that he could get kind of hit with by fans. Again, I don't see all the mentions. We're predisposed just as human beings to, you know, if there's 99 positive comments and one negative one, the one negative one sticks with us. Sure. So it really only takes a handful of people, and somebody like him, like, he's going to have a lot of crap to deal with. So again, good for him for being vulnerable and strong. And I thought it was really, I obviously, again, I say I don't speak Spanish. They didn't have a translator. I got the letter that he prepared and wrote translated. And when he was done with it, he kind of broke down in tears. Got a couple hugs from his teammates, his wife, his family. It was just a really cool, really powerful moment. And like, I was hoping that he was going to stick around for one more year, be like, hey, I want to live and play in Miami. I won't take a DP deal. I was talking to people at the club about this a couple weeks ago. I was like, please tell me that this is a possibility. And they're like, maybe he'll change his mind.
Yeah, he did an interview. I don't know if the full interview was released, but with his teammate, Victor Ulloa.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in Spanish. And it was like one of those, man, I'm like, I wish I would have seen this sooner. I would have wished I'd seen that side of it sooner. Crimson Pizza just said, Roy Keane announced his retirement and emotionally 2 foots a random passerby. It's a little different out there, okay? David Meyer said, does MLS get the most great player retirement press conference in the world? Meaning, is this the best?
I think I get the concept. I think it's a half joke about because people come here and then retire.
Oh, sure. Know. Well, I mean, I just saw a story about Lionel Messi deciding on what his future is going to be, and he's not going to decide until next year. But all, you know, a lot of the rumor. I mean,
signs are all pointing to Miami.
We saw him in Florida, in Miami, and then they were buddy buddy with Higuain. You know, I mean, it feels like it could be happening. And if MLS gets the retirement speech, would it be bigger than him leaving Barcelona?
I mean, it can't be.
I guess it can't
it
be.
It can't be.
But the tears, bro. Oh. Zoom in on those. Okay. We're just like, you know, awful, you know, sports producers that are just hoping awful things happen so we can.
Emotional. I think those were proud tears. I was looking back on everything.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Michael Raymond said Gonzalo is retiring so Messi can come in. hey, bro.
They would have been able to have them both. I want it to be pointed out. Like, they did have an open DP spot. And there's no way that he would have been back on a DP spot. Like, I can't imagine that the team. But again, he even said it's like he had decided months ago. Like, this wasn't like a yesterday.
Right. There was some rumor.
Through his dad or whatever. And he was like, you'll hear it from me when I am. But
dad, why'd you ruin? Like, yo, we had a content strategy planned around this. What are you doing, Killing pops? So speaking of Inter Miami, what do you make of this turnaround, especially this year? And we know all the financial issues that they dealt with and the penalties and everything. But for Phil Neville to really,
awesome.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's been great. And then to turn around and then bring in Alejandro Pozuelo, which, I mean,
Chris Henderson's been awesome.
Yeah. I'm like, how does this happen? But it worked out. But to make those, to make these changes and still like have the team kind of believing that they could possibly make a playoff spot, and they're sitting in a playoff spot right now. But what do you make of that turnaround?
Yeah. So I'll talk about Chris Henderson, the sporting director. Incredible. It was like a magician the way that he was able to. He inherited so many bad contracts and financial woes. Like, they had sanctions because of previous regimes doing things illegally, Matuidi, all that stuff. Like, he had nothing to work with, and he kind of leveraged everything he could to make the team competitive enough. And on the other side of that, Phil Neville, who there was so many kind of, you know, shots taken at him. Oh, you only got this because of nepotism. You only got this because you're friends with David Beckham. Like, whatever. he's been phenomenal this year. He benched Gonzalo Higuain early in the season. He has found the right way to balance challenging his best players. And like, you listen to him in a press conference, like, you can tell why the kind of the locker room can, you know, you can tell why they're fighting like this. This team has never fought like this. Even in his first year, they were making changes last year. But like, this was a team that if something went wrong, that's it. They're going to fold over.
Right.
Like the culture foundational change that has started with Phil Neville and Chris Henderson as well in the front office and everything else that they've done behind the scenes around the club to build out scouting departments and infrastructure, all this stuff. It's things that we don't see. They're so crucial. And again, like I wrote them off earlier in the season. Like, I thought that they were going to take steps in the right direction. I thought Chris Henderson was a phenomenal hire. I wasn't out on Phil Neville either. I figured that it was going to be a difficult job for him, just given everything else. And, you know, Chris Henderson didn't hire him. When just think about what you would do if you were a general manager. I want to make the decision. Look, if I'm going to do bad, I want it to be my decision. Go out on my own sword, right? So those are always difficult, and I'm curious to see how those goes. But they have a really good working relationship. Phil Neville, again, has been awesome the way that he's gotten this team. You know, I wish I was talking more about tactics. And this isn't to say that he doesn't do anything tactically, but like, at a base level, they've given this team something that didn't have to fight, which was, you know, resistance. He began bench Gonzalo Higuain, but didn't like have him go, all right, like, screw you. Like, I'm going to retire at the end of the year. Like, I don't care. Like,
right.
Who the hell are you? Like, I've done all this in my career. Like, I don't need this. Like, he kept him within the group. And like, that is such a fine line. And that doesn't happen in MLS very often.
Yeah. And it didn't hurt that Campana just completely went off. You could bench Gonzalo when you have a player like that who's scoring a bunch of goals for you. So that was great to see. Paulo Nelson said, love the haircut, Christian. That's what we need more of out here, okay? Thank you, all right? We don't need to, you know, comment on my mustache or lack of mustache. Okay, the SKC Fan TV said, are we worried about how clubs will handle attendance when a Messi or Ronaldo comes to town? Attendance? What do you mean?
Worried? Are we worried? they're gonna be happy.
What are you talking about? Well, holding bags of cash? My trip over? Yeah, I think that's what they're going to be worried about. I mean, If Messi does go to Miami at some point, it would be such a groundbreaking and just what like David Beckham did to the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think NYCFC gets a stadium when Messi goes to Inter. We need Messi to go to Inter Miami immediately. And and contact somebody on the MLS intranet and let them know to get the stadium book because he doesn't want to play in Yankee Stadium, Citi Field, or Rebel Arena. I don't know. So that's how it's going to work out. Okay. Justin Freeber said, Christian has Tommy Scoops looking like the friend duo in a 90s rom-com. I think the jacket, the hair. Bro, it's all
dude,
good.
I don't know if it's like the Jeffrey Dahmer stuff on Netflix, not anything of the fashion, the 90s fashion that are in those clubs.
Yeah.
Every time, like, I'm watching my girlfriend go like, oh, that's a dope shirt. Oh, she's like probably getting worried. Like, are you getting ideas of like more fat? You're going to have more of these clothes?
Are you going to start saying you're an old soul? You know? We don't need that, Tom. okay. SKC fans, clarifying, saying too many people and small stadiums. Well, maybe
that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. I think, look, do they add seats to stadiums? I don't think that's gonna happen.
There will be games where, like, say in the NFL stadiums like Seattle, Charlotte, and Atlanta, like where they can expand to the upper decks. Maybe they will, and like hopefully they will. That'd be great. But I think that helped. Even places like Austin that always sell out. Like Messi coming to town, it's only a good thing. And like I like a little bit more scarcity, maybe a little bit more. Like, oh my gosh, like I need to be there.
It's a hot ticket. Yeah. That's why I hear it even from LAFC. Or comedians in LA, they're like, oh, I went to an LFC game. They're like, yo, this is crazy. And like, I'm like, I didn't know this happened here or whatever. but sometimes they're like, yo, I can't get tickets. You know anybody? I'm like, this is where I was. Now you're coming to me now. You think I know somebody in Los Angeles is going to help you? But that is just the fact that they're asking and that that sometimes it's a tough ticket to get is and only a good sign. So
you say, yeah, man, I know somebody. Let me send you a text. StubHub.com.
I got you. Master. My homie, StubHub Rodriguez. He got you. He's going to take care of you. okay. So there were a couple other things there was an article from J. Sam Jones about what went wrong for a couple teams.
This dude is really legitimately hilarious. He's a really funny dude.
He's great. And I know he was
mainly focusing on Atlanta United for a long time. Yeah. I think he maybe
he also worked for the Striker, where he's like the Atlanta United beat writer. But we brought him along as a feature writer right before the pandemic, or was supposed to. And then he's been doing, I used to do the newsletter. It is 1,000,000,000% better than when I did it, I gotta say. It was funny, like what like Sam got it, I was like, oh yeah, like that's obvious.
So shouts to J. Sam Jones, and his article is on MLSsoccer.com as well. But given that SKC Fan TV is in the chat right now, Sporting Kansas City, what happened? He basically, I'll just read the headline and just said, William Agada didn't start the year with them. And Sporting Kansas City, who are essentially the pillar of consistency, realistically. I mean, I know the Sounders didn't make make the playoffs for the first time in their history and in the MLS history. But Sporting Kansas City, it's been difficult and disappointing to watch. So a team that pretty much sells out every game and not pieces together this season.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I guess 1 year too long. Plus, again, like, I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses necessarily for any team just missing the playoffs or whatever, but they a DP center forward and a DP number 10 didn't play a minute. I don't know how many teams can really recover from that. Like, this is a unique league, and, like, when those two spots you don't get anything from, and through no fault of your own, it's like, you know, Alan Pulido has had injury issues, but, like, you can't plan for that, right? So, Willie Agata has been incredible. Like, so that's... It's like, I don't want to be reductive, but he's really been insane. Like, when they signed him, I was, like, looking at his profiles, like, seeing some videos. I was like, he just looks like somebody who's going to be a guy for a few months, and who knows? Like, this is – he scored double digits one time, and that was in the Israeli second tier. It's not exactly a feeder league to MLS often. Right. Like, and, dude, like, he's incredible. And he's got vibes guy. Like, shout out his 100%. Vibes. Like, they needed that bad. Even more than his goals, they needed his vibes.
I knew he was going to be a legend, and he's going to be a legend. When he backflipped on his penalty in the U.S. Open Cup against Sacramento, and then they lost – bro.
And people still love them. People still love them. Yo, my favorite highlight, my favorite video of the entire year in MLS was when he scored a goal and sprinted over to Peter Vermes, jumped in his arms. Vermes wanted no part of him jumping into his arms, and then gave him a kiss on the cheek, which Vermes also didn't want any part of. I loved it. I could watch that a billion times, man. And he's big, big, genuine smile, like just a fun dude. Oh, my God.
You love to see it. It was great. No, so we need more of that. I think Sporting Kansas City are going to be fine next season.
I was worried until we got us. I was like, then I was like, yeah, no, they'll be fine.
Right. Seattle Sounders. We saw they lost their game against Sporting Kansas City and miss out on the playoffs. So what is it, big picture? I'm sure there's a lot of people writing stories and there's a lot of articles. But big picture, what does this mean really for the Sounders? I mean, as someone who is not a Sounders fan, I'm like, all right, well, don't stop crying, guys. I mean, you won CCL. I mean, there should be a lot of a pride for this season. But in the article, J. Sam Jones points out João Paulo missing season, and I think he got hurt in the final for the CCL final, and it just simply feels like he was the crux of the team, and they just couldn't recover from it.
They still should have had enough to make the playoffs, to be fair. But again, like, the season is a success. They're the first team to ever win CCL from MLS. If there is a Club World Cup, they'll be there. Like, it's awesome. I do remember watching that final. I think they were already up 1-0. Like, it felt pretty good that they were going to win. I know we've been hurt before. I know that we've gotten our hopes up before. But it felt pretty good that they were going to win. And when João Paulo went down and the camera panned to him at non-contact injury, you know, kind of... Yeah. No, we're not doctors, but you've seen that enough. And it's like, oh, man, I really hope this isn't what we think it is. And I remember sitting there thinking... Are we going to be looking back on this in 6 months thinking, like, wow, that's kind of where their MLS season went awry? And I wasn't thinking that they're going to miss the playoffs. I was thinking, oh, like, maybe they won't be MLS Cup contenders.
Yeah.
So it is really crazy that this is fallen. Like, he's such a great player. But again, they had enough. They had enough depth. And even a 16-year-old is stepping up in the midfield. And why am I blanking on his name? Obed Vargas.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt, too. And, like, you shouldn't be relying on a 16-year-old as, like, oh, like, if he was healthy, we would have been fine. So I don't know, man. Like, I still think that they should have had enough. They have enough in prime talent and, like, end of prime talent that it shouldn't have mattered. And 7 teams out of 14 make the playoffs in both conferences. So I don't know. I think it's still a success. It's still a success. Yeah, I don't care.
In a season of so many highs, I mean, winning CCL was big, but that to me got overshadowed by Nuhu scoring his first goal. I mean,
you need to get Sam Station
because what? There was nothing bigger than that, dude. Everybody lost their minds when he scored. But no, I don't feel bad for Seattle. constantly in MLS Cup finals. You know, I went to the first MLS Cup final I went to was in Toronto when they won in 2016.
Yeah. Wow. And, look at the bona fides.
And it was the coldest I had ever been in my life. And that's when I we met Drew Carey.
That's awesome.
He was one of the owners.
Yeah.
And we were like, hey, Drew, like, we're comedians. And he's like, what are you doing here? Like, literally could not understand.
And you guys were like, what the hell are you doing here?
It was wild. Okay. Any other ones that stand out? I mean, look, there were, you know, San Jose. I mean, just San Jose is all, you know, they got a lot to figure out. The Revs is an interesting one because I mean, they were so incredibly bad after winning Supporters Shield last season. Is anything that stood out to you of what? I mean, honestly, losing Matt Turner, losing Tajon Buchanan, but
and Buxa.
Buxa, yeah. I guess because they just not find goals.
Yeah, and like injuries at the wrong time. Like when I kept thinking that they were gonna make their run in the summer, it's like, all right, like this team has too much talent. Carlos Hill, like there was a couple games where like I kept joking that like the attack was like Carlos Hill and the boys because it was like third string dudes around him because the starters and the backups were all hurt and they were still getting results because Carlos Hill is just insanely talented. Yeah. I don't know what happened. Like the entire defense took a step back except for Georgi Petrovic coming in for Matt Turner. So I thought he was going to be the most difficult to replace. Somehow they did, which is incredible. I'm right now, you know, voting him second for goalkeeper of the year. It's incredible that they were able to do that.
He's been incredible.
Tajon Buchanan, because not to get too MLS nerdy, he was on a generation Adidas contract, which means he doesn't count against the cap. You cannot replace a best 11 player who doesn't count against the cap, right? Like, with just value for value, that's difficult. But then all the players are injured. And Giacomo Veroni, who came in for Buxa, was hurt. Gustavo Bo was hurt. Ismael Tujori Trotti, they traded for him, and he didn't play a minute because he was hurt. Like, all that added up, and they just never, like, the defense took a step back as it was, and then attacking injuries.
Okay. All right. So let's wrap up with I mentioned we have to talk about the NWSL a bit and the Yates report. You know, I read some of it and then I went through. You know, it's awful. Read. You know, go to The Athletic and it's Meg Linehan and at Thrace. There's a lot of people doing incredible coverage on it. But if you do not know the story, I mean, last year we talked about it, obviously, with the news about coaches being involved in just coercion, sexual coercion. It's just all gross, gross stuff. But I think this particular report, I think, highlighted a lot of, like, kind of systemic problems that I think we were not aware of. And there's a lot of, like, you know, who knew this? And we don't know everything, but and this is, I think, kind of just scratching the surface of it. But the interesting thing here is, at least what I want to talk about is the sort of the systemic problems. And so you grew up playing soccer, right? Mm. I did not. I got into it. I played FIFA, right? And it's a lot safer. I'll say that. So I didn't grow up around a culture of being coached and somebody like, you know, I played sports in school and stuff like that, but I didn't grow up around in any serious, you know, environment where coaches were yelling at me or angry with me or anything of the sort. But once it gets to a point, you know, even at a young age, like organized soccer, there's some stakes, right? There's either, you know, parents that want their kids to succeed, or if a coach says like, oh, I think you know your son or daughter has real potential, then it adds this level of weight to every to the sport.
Yeah.
And this is what it felt like reading this report, where it felt like the players in NWSL were being treated like, you know, I mean, there's no other word besides abuse, right? Yeah. It's just like it's like trying to find the line between what's a good coach telling you something and criticizing you to get the best out of you, and then when does it cross the line to just straight up absolute abuse and disrespect and things like that? So that's kind of what was my biggest takeaway, where it's hard to say, and this happened probably in boys and girls soccer, men's and women's, but
as someone who grew up playing, is this something that either that you've experienced about like, oh, you know, that criticism went a little too far?
Yeah, I mean, like, and just even first going specifically on the NWSL stuff, it just sucks. Like, it's so disheartening. It's so sad that there's, you know, so many, that the culture just existed that so many people thought this was okay. Like, oh, like the power dynamics and stuff. It's just so gross and just, I don't know. It hurts to read. You have to push yourself to read through it. You can't become desensitized to it. All that stuff, of course. But yeah, going general, like, that's obviously black and white. Like, all of that stuff, gross, disgusting. It is an interesting kind of theme that you pick up on, and like what's the gray area of like the criticism and the yelling, like stuff like that. It's like, all right, like how much is too much? Like what's coaching? What's pushing players to get better? Like, I struggle with that in all walks of life. You even think of the internal stuff you do to yourself, like, oh, like need to get to the gym. Oh, I need to work harder. And then it's like, all right, when you know how to find the balance. And yeah, like growing up, I had obviously a bunch of different coaches, college, like high school, like every different kinds on all walks of life. One of my favorite ones was the most abusive, like his style was yelling, and he was, you know, sometimes you think that he might cross the line, and the other times and he was a product of like the 70s of where like that's all you did. Like my first college coach was a legend at my school, and it was his last year. He retired after our freshman year. I'm hearing even from guys that are on the team that were there 2-3 years earlier, it's like, yeah, if something happened, we'd just go run in the woods. Like that's what. That was preseason training. And then it'd be like, hey, pick up that log and like go run with it. And it's like these were things that were just like normal in whatever, yeah, 20, 30
that's
years
why
ago.
You became a Navy SEAL, right?
Like all this, it's just, yeah. So, and like I don't have, nobody has an it. Like these gray areas, it's all so, so awful and so difficult. It's just,
I would say it's a thing probably in men's soccer that men are probably just used to it, or used to not saying anything, yeah, or not, maybe not being certain, like, was this something that went too far, yeah, or whatever? Like, you carrying a log to me seems pretty funny. I mean, that seems funny. I mean, maybe there was like some lesson behind it, but I think we know that line when of like, this is, you know, yeah, maybe it might have been a bit aggressive, but we understand, like, all right, yeah, you carried a log, it's not the end of the world, but anything that goes to racism or sexism, yeah, or something like that, or being homophobic or whatever. But to hear that there were coaches in NWSL regularly doing this, is unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's
incomprehensible.
It's a thing. Like, I read there's a great book called The National Team by Caitlin Murray. I read it maybe like 2 years ago, and there were a lot of quotes from former U.S. Women's National Team players talking about the previous leagues before NWSL and how they dealt. I don't think there were specific, in that book, there weren't specific issues about harassment or assault, mm-hmm, or anything like that, but there were about just the kind of the treatment of the players and the training facilities that they had to use. And like, we've all heard the gross stories and, mm-hmm, of some of the places that they had to train and play. And one of the things, and this is what I took from the Yates report, was that there were some players that didn't, there wasn't an environment to be able to say anything because there was a fear of either a repercussion, mm-hmm, against them, or that it would actually hurt the league and make the league look bad. So, and I've seen this from like Julie Foudy say this, where they didn't want to publicly criticize the league because they were worried that the league would fold entirely and they would almost have to live with that guilt of destroying, yeah, something that everyone tried to build. And so that's, I say that to say that, you know, I have a lot of respect and admiration for NWSL players because this is in their minds, mm-hmm, right? I mean, when you see those specifics about players, you know, trying to say something, and there's like a weird like gaslighting environment where it was like a coach would. I saw this from Michelle Batos, the Gotham FC goalkeeper, mm-hmm, where she said that a coach would preemptively say something negative about a player that he was targeting to do, like, whatever, either that player would, he would criticize the player, and then when the player would be like, hey, I think you went, you crossed the line, so then the rest of the team was like, you know, use, they would be, have a biased opinion of that player because the coach already said that this player is problematic or the player has an issue or whatever. And that kind of stuff, it's just, from a logical, like, work environment, workplace stuff, it's horrifying that that stuff, that there wasn't that oversight. And it just says a lot about, you know, this sport really in the U.S. is like in its infancy. Yeah. And then when it comes to women's soccer, it's still, we're still at the foundation of it and figuring out the basics. And a lot of that stuff is not, it's, you know, people are doing the work to like kind of set up that, get that stuff into place. But it's, like you said, it's disheartening that it wasn't already there, but there's a, it's troubling, it's complicated, but again, just a massive amount of respect for the players that did come forward.
Yeah, and it's really awesome, it's really brave, like, it's just, the power dynamics, and again, the people who are supposed to be leaders and that you're trusting with your career, with your well-being in a lot of these cases because of how, like, many lines are crossed, it's just... It's awful. I wish I had something deeper to say. I wish I had something more illuminating. But just the power dynamics, and you know, I try to think about it myself. Like, you're from 6-7 years old. You trust the coach. All that crap. Like, don't speak back. All that nonsense. Like, they were powerless. Like the power dynamics and the people that you're supposed to be trusting that make you a coach, a teacher, like manage all these things that are supposed to uplift you that were holding you down is just. It's incomprehensible to think about, and such a widespread.
And I think it's interesting because even the position that we're in, right? I have you been to like a United Soccer Coaches conference or everything like that? But I've gone to three, and it's a fascinating world. It's its own world, and I say this to say, like, you know, I know there's plenty of people who play soccer, people who coach soccer that listen to this show. It's like, I would hope the obvious is like to not do these awful things. But more than that, I think maybe the culture of coaching, especially in soccer, is maybe we don't need more Bobby Knights. You know what I mean? Like, can we maybe get past that?
More Jim Curtins is what we need.
Jim Curtins, you know, who's the... Phil Jackson. Wasn't he super zen, Phil Jackson? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I'm a Knicks fan. His lasting memory was being an awful GM. So
so maybe that's the maybe point to take as far as like if you are involved in coaching in soccer at any part of the world or whatever, because we know, you know, I've you know, it's like cheesy, but it's like this game can like change people's lives and it brings so much joy to so many people. So when you hear stuff like this, and when you hear that it's like so commonplace and so systemic, and then even on top of that, when people try to point it out and report it to the proper channels, and that nothing gets done, that is when you start seeing like people are protecting the institution before the actual players. And that's when we cannot do that. There's no other word for it. Okay. All right. So we'll wrap up there. Thank you, everybody. Nice serious note. But no, you know, all that stuff had to be said anyway. Morgan Tenza says, should me and Alexis do a live show from London to even this out? Oh, that's right. Morgan is in... London, Wembley, for she's going to be taking photographs at the game. So shout out to Morgan and Alexis. They're going to be there. Go ahead, Morgan. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm not going to produce it.
Start a competing show. And let's go head to head. But no, that would be entertaining. Go for it. All right. Anything else before we go, everybody? Let me know. But Tom Boger, thank you so much for joining us, man. Anything you want to make sure you plug and let people know about before we go?
No, man. Thanks for having me. You guys are—I love you guys. It's always great fun. It's honored to drive up from Central Jersey to be here.
All right.
So yeah, just Twitter Tom Boger. That's it. Make sure that you guys, obviously, if you're watching this, you're following you guys. That's love watching you guys succeed.
Thank you so much, Tom. Maybe we'll toss you a scoop one day. Who knows?
The stadium. Whenever the stadium goes.
Who knows? We delivered one scoop.
Yeah, remember.
All right. CJ Sapong, speaking of Nashville, when CJ Sapong signed for Nashville SC, we dropped that news.
Yeah, I remember.
And yo, it pissed off everybody in MLS. They're like, yo, why do they know this? What's going on? Bro, I can't reveal my sources. Okay? It was, you know, an internal White House staffer. Robin Seguini says, Central Jersey does exist.
Thank you very much.
I'm
living proof.
Are you a pro Central Jersey?
Yeah, I grew up there. I'm living there again now. A mile from the beach. That's what it is. It's Central Jersey.
Okay.
Look, behind this hill.
I have no dog in this fight. I, you know, get rid of the state if it was me. Okay. I live there now. All right, y'all the absolute best.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
There it is. I didn't get the speaker working, but that button is Papi, Levitar's dad.
I'm a huge Levitar. when that news came out, by the way, I was like, I did a fist bump in my living room. I was like, dude, like I've been listening to that show for like 8 years. I love Levitar. Chris Whittingham, I'm good friends with him now. Like, you guys being there, Grant Wall being there, it makes me happy. It's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, and to say, I'll say that. Everybody in the Levitar family at Metalark has been unbelievably supportive, super kind.
That's awesome.
Look, as far as just getting help, support, resources.
Furniture.
Chris Whittingham brought this in here. I also have this one. You can't hear it, but this is Chris Whittingham saying it hit him in the penis.
It hit him in the penis.
I talked to him so much about that. It's like I didn't know that I was just going to be the penis guy now.
I wish whatever. I'll fix the audio next week for.
These are two things that I can know intrinsically, so that worked out. I was a perfect guess for it not working.
All good. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. A reminder, please check out our interview with Tom Davies of Everton Football Club, who also has he had a pretty good mustache for a while, too. I don't know if you saw him. He has a good one. Anyway, it's on our YouTube channel right now, and you can listen to it on the podcast. So make sure you listen to that. If you're an Everton fan, especially if you're a Liverpool fan, seriously, Tom is super, super funny. We had a great, great conversation with him. And honestly, it's like, it's not easy to get a Premier League player on the show, I'll be honest. So.
What a get. That was a great get.
So please, please listen to it, because I know, you know, everybody at the club will be grateful. All right. We will see you next week. Alexis will be back here next week. We also have some pretty fun news that we will be dropping next week. So make sure you tune in for that. The Cooligans to the moon, baby. All right, everybody. Peace.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.